flying clothesline, a 2x4 to the face. Then she hits you with a turnbuckle splash. Wrestle Club Podcast with Sakisa. It's her and her friends, and they talk about wrestling, every kind of wrestling.
Ladies and gentlemen and everyone in between, welcome to a brand new episode of the Wrestle Club UK podcast. As always, my name is Sakisa and I am the head of the table. And this week, for a second week in a row, I have been joined by my Wakanda forever brother, Mr. Ibs Sese.
Come on. How we doing, everyone?
We're good.
Well, it's just Sakisa and Tom in it, but...
Yes,
how we did.
Did you call him Tom? Tim?
No, the reason why I called you Tom, is I see the T, and in my head, your name is Tom Fox. I don't know why. Yeah.
Yeah, just go with it. Why not? Like, yeah. I'm going to go with the new name.
Let me finish. And also, because of the Simon's not fully on my phone, and obviously I ain't got my dyslexic glasses on, and it's doing about this. Hi. Tim, my bad.
What's up? I'm also here.
You're feeling a bit. You're looking. Well, you seem a bit croaky. What's going on?
No, number one, innit? Like, I think my age is fighting with my sleep too. I've just been hurt, just upset. Do you know what I mean? Sleepless nights, because our baby's gone.
Yeah. We'll talk about it in a second. It's been an upsetting week, but I feel like maybe Ibs has been doing some madness. As we know, as the podcast listeners, regular listeners will know, Ibs and Danny, aka the Fluffy Boys, are the party boys. They are the F boys. They are.
The tag team. Can't people turn over a new leaf? Can they not better themselves? Or can they not just be tired from screaming at the TV? And, okay, yeah.
Well, we'll get into it.
Basically, we'll get into it. I'm being a good boy. I'm actually listening to Keith's advice. I'm actually watching wrestling instead of being a bad boy.
Now I'm
a man of God, yeah, or a man of... the higher power, aka I believe in you, Undertaker. Yeah, you're trying to get at me. I don't appreciate this.
Well,
it's not everyday GSD.
It's not everyday GSD. This is a very special episode, ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between, because this is our Black History Month special. Me and Ibs are going to have a little round table discussion about some of our favourite wrestlers in the Black History Collective, within WWE, as well in wrestling in general, as well as the future. What does the future look like for Black wrestlers within wrestling? So we're going to have a roundtable discussion before that. But before we do that, let's talk about the week in wrestling. Well, let's get into it. Number one, I've had an upsetting week. And I think Ibs is the same, because our dear Samantha has announced that she has left WWE. And I am so upset.
There goes my baby. Ooh, 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 ooh. That's how I feel. I'm hurting.
For those of you who don't know, she was the best thing within wrestling for a very long time.
I'll be so honest with you. I've never cared about any Riddick Mouser really until Samantha Irvin. I'm not going to lie.
It's a fact, like, Lillian, it's a fact.
Like, Lillian was there. Finkel, he did some funny stuff here and there. Chimmel just had a funny name. But apart from that, like, Samantha's the only one I've cared about. I don't know why. I'm trying to keep it, like, if we're talking on a professional thing, like, she just had an energy about her that was second to none. Like, even when you saw people going through tables next to her in the corner, like, But she
yeah,
got
I think it.
It
was the first time she as well for a very long time that WWE really showcased her, like an announcer as part of like the roster. It felt like she was part of the roster. And obviously, like, you could tell that certain wrestlers, like talking about Cody Rhodes, CM Punk, really appreciated what she did in the ring. And obviously her accents, for example, Chelsea Green. I can't do it, but you know, Chelsea Green. Like, it was so, like, she distinctive in what she does.
Yeah.
And I'm so upset. Obviously, they tried to bring back Lillian because it was obviously announced on Monday. She put out an Instagram post on Monday, announced on Monday, make it seem like it was very last minute decision. Lillian has come in. Within the first, when they announced Lillian was here, the first thing she mentioned was, this is the World Tag Team Containers.
Yeah, yeah, everyone's like, oh, Lillian. Lillian was shook. I'm not going to lie. Lillian was shook.
I bet you she was.
I think, you don't blame her to be shook, to be fair. Like, first time doing it properly in 8 years, like, what before they give you, like, no, they'll give you like a match at WrestleMania here and there. But it's weird that, you know, when everyone has like passing the torch moments, it felt like Lillian gave Samantha her passing the torch moment. Was it a few months ago?
Yeah, it was a few months ago.
Yeah, and then now Samantha's giving it back to her. Now, there's like, now, bitch, actually have it back, please. These moments allow me to take anything
else. You can take it.
Which, I'm not going to lie, I think Samantha's talent was so big. Yeah. I think WWE should have found a way. They should have been like, you know what? We really don't want you to have a music career, but because you're so good at what you do, fine. I think they could have made
exceptions.
They could have made an exception for her, man. Really and truly.
For those of you who don't know, the rumor is that how Samantha wanted to move on with her music career, and WWE were kind of like, well, we can't let you do other projects outside of WWE. And she kind of was like, okay, fine, bye. The other rumor was that the other question is whether she's going to join AEW, because obviously her partner in crime, her real life partner, Mr. Ricochet, is now in AEW. Will she join AEW? I think it would be stupid if they didn't, like, ask her. But Justin would be very upset.
Yeah, Justin's a dynamic. Actually, when you think about it, Justin was really good when he was in the Fed. But like, now surely, even he would see Samantha ever be like, yeah, fair enough, fine.
Yeah,
just come and do 1, 2, 3. Yeah,
yeah,
do 1, 2, show.
Well, we will hope that things will change. I think it might be, hopefully it'll be like a bit like Pat McAfee, where she goes for a while, then comes back.
Yeah, I prefer that. Or she just pulls up to WrestleMania. She should just do WrestleMania.
Well, speaking about WrestleMania, tickets are coming out on Friday. I really want to go. But I've already looked at the price of some of the tickets.
How are the price for tickets? Tell me so you can scare me off.
We're looking like $2,000 for a decent seat.
Hey! Chinekedima. Hey!
Holy shit.
And they don't do PayPal, really... do they? No.
They do, actually. They do. They've got pay now. They've got pay. Buy now, pay later.
Hey! Listen.
I think we could do it. Maybe we should just do a fundraiser.
But we've already bought the ticket for pay as you play. Like, I beg you, please, guys. I will miss this payment.
Exactly.
If you don't secure that bag for me. Listen, I'll be very honest with you.
We feel like we could do a fundraiser.
Listen, I'll be very honest with you. I wouldn't do it more than anything in this world. But I don't know. Basically, if I could do that, like, you know, when you go to like Glastonbury or like Reading and Leeds, and then like they do the payment plan as they go along.
Yeah.
If they do that, I'm in. If that man tries to ask me for $2,000 at Ticketmaster, or whatever, my body physically won't allow that to happen. I don't think I'd be about to press send, and my body will shake and just shut down. Because $2,000 for a ticket, where?
But just imagine, Vegas is going to be covered with wrestling fans.
Oh, and imagine, like, oh. Do you know what? Listen, where is it next year after Vegas?
They announced that one.
They need to find a cheaper city. Because this Vegas life. Where was it last year? Philadelphia. Phenomenal. We could have done Philadelphia.
Who wants to do Philadelphia? No one wants to do that.
Philadelphia. Listen.
Hey, don't ditch Philly. Philly's a nice city.
Yeah, Philly's a nice city. Home of pizza.
Cheesesteaks.
Brotherly love.
She wants to go to Vegas. That's what she wants to go.
Hey, we all want to go to Vegas.
It would be my third year in a row if it happens.
Some Vegas money, Sakisa.
I don't have Vegas money.
None of us do. None of us do.
This is the thing. None of us do. One day. Yeah, one day. And hey, if your plan came correct, all we need is the money to get there. And technically, Her Majesty Revenues and Customs would understand and give us the money back.
It'll be great.
Yeah. Imagine going into like the audit office. Yeah. Yeah, I went to World Watch Wrestling, but it's for business.
It's for business, isn't it?
Let's show the video evidence. You screaming at The Rock. Ah! Yeah, that was for business. That was 100% for business. Devon, so, get the tables.
HMRC. Speaking about The Rock, we're going to go into the Bloodline because the Bloodline has once again taken over WWE. Has taken over again. Everyone's talking about the Bloodline. As you've missed, if you didn't see on SmackDown, the show opened with Bloodline 2.0, Solo coming out saying that how he's running the show, he needs to be acknowledged. And then Jay came out and was like, you know what? I'm not in this kind of situation. I was out. You not carry on doing what you're doing. You're still little bro. I still got love for you. But why do you have to get these men up in here? And then went to Jacob. My favorite part was he went to Jacob. Like, if you keep staring at me like that, I'm going to knock you out.
You lost your mind.
I was like, that was not the thing to say, Jay.
Have you lost your ever-loving mind, Jay Uso?
That was not the thing to say.
The fact that he looked you directly in the eye, I was like, no, you actually believe in your nonsense, do you, Jay?
Exactly.
Crazy, dog. You believe that you can beat this guy.
And then said to Solo, if the next time I see you, it's going to be different. Left, obviously, there was a backstage segment with Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
With Roman Reigns basically being like, I'm proud of you. Yeah. And Jay being like, no yeet. And I was like, okay, this yeet situation is going a bit too far.
As a sentence makes no sense.
No sense.
No yeet. Is this what you man are going with? And the thing is, yeah, it's not like WWE, you don't know how to speak slang. We all saw the new NXT WWE advert with Triple H and Shawn Michaels where Triple H did Skibbity Boat Ohio. So we know that man exactly. Tim, mad thing, Tim. Hey,
watch the video,
there's a famous video in the 90s of DX, reading the letter that they got sent by the USA Network and like Sky Sports, basically talking about all the swearing that they were not allowed to do in WWE anymore. They famously read that letter on air, thinking, and then Vince thought they were going to get in massive trouble. And it turns out it gave them a ratings pop. And then they did the same one fairly recently with like Gen Z words. And I'm not going to lie, didn't know half of them. I didn't know half of them. I felt old. I felt old that these two men were doing slangs about new words.
It's just about getting that skibbity riz, you know?
Yeah, skibbity riz. And also Randy Orton and Sexy Red, but that's a story for another day. That made no sense to me, but also I was here for it. Okay, sorry. Back to the Bloodline.
Okay. And then on Raw this week, it was Jey Uso in a rematch against Braun. And then who turned up? Bloodline 2.0.
Because apparently their dogs.
Yeah. And then what happened? They cost Jey Uso his Intercontinental Championship, which he had for like 3 weeks.
Didn't we say some shit like this was going to happen?
I know, but I was hoping shit like this was going to happen closer to War Games.
Okay. First off, why Jey showed up on SmackDown made no sense whatsoever. Like, you already last Monday went, nah, I'm good. I'm not involved. And in 5 days, you're like, actually, let me just get involved just a little bit, just a little bit. But everyone likes me. I'm Jey. But it makes no sense. If anything, what they should have done is they should have got Solo and the Bloodline to, like, push for the match. Yeah. Roman actually just like show vulnerability and be like, guys, you guys are the man. We're not ready. We don't have a team. And then he's like, oh yeah, they beat up everyone. And then basically, if the bloodline didn't get goaded, it would have been better if the Bloodline showed up on Raw, fucked up Jey for no reason to be like, I don't want anyone to be shining in our family apart from me. That makes a lot more sense. But like, I don't feel sorry for Jey.
Really?
Like his actions in the en route to losing his title were stupid. Why did you go and Raw? He basically went on SmackDown and fast himself up towards the situation. There was no need for him to be involved, especially the way you made it that you didn't want to be involved 5 days ago. 5 days ago, you were looking at your brother like he was a dickhead. Like, you're really asking me to get involved. I'm not getting involved in this nonsense. 5 days, you're like, listen, I know my brother's a waste man, but I need you to calm down because you're kind of moving like a waste man. What? It makes no sense. Rubbish. Sorry. I think it's rubbish.
It felt there for a minute then, like you was like one of the elder family members, like, what are you lot doing?
Yeah, what are you lot doing? You lot used to play together in the streets. Now you might want to kill each other in the streets. What? Crazy.
Yeah, it is obviously the Bloodline situation that is making especially SmackDown more interesting at this moment in time. However, speaking about SmackDown, we have had a brand new tag team in the division. The Motor City Machine Guns have made their debut on SmackDown this week and won the tag team contenders match that happened in a triple threat tag team match. They won. Congratulations to them. Going on.
Congratulations.
Next.
Welcome.
Welcome. You know it's about time.
I don't know if you get this as well, Sakisa, but like when you watch different wrestlers on other promotions, and then when they show up at WWE, you get a kind of like, yeah, man. Like, it's like a fun feeling in your system. Like, yeah, I've seen you like in different places. Like, I low-key am like a fan.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like, when you show up and like, yeah, you're just like, oh.
I think this one hits slightly different because they've been like so well-known for so many years.
Yeah.
It feels like everyone knew who they were.
Yeah. And it's very
so you know
rare,
how like sometimes like someone turns up and they're kind of like, oh, we kind of know who you are. Same with like Jacob Fatu when he turned up first time. Everyone's like, we kind of know who you are. But Motor City Machine Guns, everyone knows who they are.
Iconic. An iconic duo. Like, they could get the title. Yeah, the hand in the finger and the fact that they look so young. They still look young to this day. They've got like, who's that guy from Green Day? Now, come on, guys. You man know who the drummer.
Yep, one of them.
Oh, what? There's been more than one Green Day drummer?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's wrong. I'm talking about the wrong band. That's why I'm rattling you.
Very cool.
This is really bad. I'm talking about, what's his name? Pete Wentz. They got Pete Wentz energy about them. Like,
oh, you're...
You see Pete... Yeah. Because if you see Pete Wentz now, you're like, you don't look like you're 45, but he probably is 45. Like, and it's the same with the Motor City Machine Gun boys. Like, them boys have been grafting since for at least 15 years and they still look exactly the same. Do you agree, Sakisa?
I do agree.
And they were really good. They still had the offense. They were really rapid. I would love to see him against that. But it's given the SmackDown division a shot in the arm.
Needed something to inject within the company. Initially, I thought it was going to be the Lucha Brothers from AEW.
I think if they do show up, I want them to show up on a straight storyline thing. I don't want them to show up on a, hey, we're the Lucha Brothers. Remember, we're scary. Nah, because a lot of wrestlers have been pulled up recently. And they've been pulled up like, oh, it's this new guy. Say hello to the new guy. And then the new guy's like, hello. And then eventually, well, we forget about the new guy. We need, like, usually all the guys who have pulled up, like, lately, all the memorable wrestlers have come out from NXT, have come out on, like, a smoke thing or, like, a fighting thing. Like, Lash Legend.
Yeah. Well, like, let's talk Lash about Lash, actually. Lash is doing some things at the moment in time.
Yeah, listen. Like, I think, obviously, we're used to watching wrestling, like, for a long time, yeah? It does take us, like, probably a hot sec to get more involved into matches, especially when you're like, oh! But that Lash Legend Piper-Niven match, yeah, I got into it fairly quickly because they built the story of Will She Lift Her. But also, when we think about this, when we look back on it in hindsight, Lash should be able to lift, like, Piper.
Yeah, Lash is definitely doing some things. And I was like, oh, are you potentially getting called up? Oh, okay, I see you.
But is she called up now?
No. She's still in NXT. I think it was a tester.
I don't like these half-hearted call-ups. It ruins the credibility of the wrestler, and it kind of ruins the credibility of like NXT in a way. Because if these are dons that like getting filtered out, I think if you're gone, you're gone, man.
I definitely think it was a tester.
So are you pro wrestlers dipping their toe into the main roster and then going back?
No, I think it's about if it's like I don't like, you know how Pete Dunne and like those kind of people are like, I don't like it when it happens like that. But if it's like someone from NXT coming up being like seeing how they do on the main roster for like a couple matches, that's fine for me. It's the back and forth I don't get.
But it takes away the pop, don't it? If you know, like,
I know, but it has happened before when people have turned up, for example, in Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble's the one where we all kind of understand, like, yo, anyone's involved. Like when Jordan Grace pulled up, we're like, all right, fair. But then what happens to Metaphor? Cause I don't watch NXT as much, I should do. What happens to Metaphor if these two guys are on the main roster? Metaphor.
They're still part of Metaphor.
But there's Noam Dar, and the other person pull up? Are they pulling up back on SmackDown? Because Noam Dar's run, I think Noam Dar, like, it was one of those where he basically was at a wrong time in WWE.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Noam Dar now would get more traction in the WWE rather than when he was like, oh, I'm going to be part of the Cruiserweights. And that was a dark time in wrestling, when we think about that. When they did the Cruiserweight Hour thing. Oh, yeah. Man. Let's not talk about that no more. I digress, as one would say.
The two-hour matter with Raw. How do you feel? Because I personally feel it's too short.
At this moment in time, I'm happy with it. At this moment in time. For the simple reason is, ain't you meant to watch a TV show and be like, yeah, I want more. I want more. Like, ain't that the idea of a TV show? Like, we complained when it was 3 hours, and Lord knows I complained when it was 3 hours. So being 2 hours is very, like, welcoming. And it does, it's jam-packed. Like, you don't have a chance to breathe while I was watching Raw. So for me, I'm pro 2 hour rule. And then if we really need to do a 3 hour rule, we do a 3 hour rule. But like, yeah. But then I think what would be the stakes? What would be, how big are the stakes for us to be like 3 hour rule? Back to 3 hours. Do you miss your 3 hours?
I do miss my 3 hours. It just feels like...
No, because there's a lot of rubbish. And maybe because we got the PTSD from all the mid-card nonsense from like 3-4 years ago, where we were like, let the Lord take us. Why are we watching this? It's 2:30 a.m. I need to be better with my life. When Baron Corbin was running the show, is that what you want?
Nah.
Looking like a BL1 bar owner. Nah, he's rubbish.
Nah.
What is he doing with his life? He's on SmackDown, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to talk about really, just really quickly, about AEW before we do our Black History Month roundtable.
Okay.
There seems to be this weird... Number one, John Moxley needs to stop talking in riddles. Can you just say how it's meant to be? I don't know what you're talking about, John Moxley.
I think John Moxley thinks he's Jake the Snake Roberts.
Fair.
With his level of like... And the way he moves his head is like, basically, if he's like basically Gen Z Jake the Snake. Because Jake the Snake had his like piercing, scary bars, yeah? But he wouldn't move his head as much as John Moxley because he had a big neck on him. A big snake on him, sorry. If the snake wasn't there, I think Jake the Snake would move his head the same way John does. But John, I feel... Please continue about John. Sorry, before I continue talking about John.
No, it's fine. I was just going to say that how... I don't know if they're still calling it the Black Ball Combat Club. It seems like they are, but I feel like they need to rename themselves to be something else. But I think at this moment in time, AEW has just got some... It's so mixed match with the energies they're bringing out. Like, for example, we've got certain things that are storylines and certain things that are meant to be storylines but don't make sense. Okay.
I've got a semi-theory about AEW. So...
Go on.
Okay. Would you say, since September, that obviously which was last month, to about now, would you say the product... Has AEW's gone downhill?
I would say the product itself is too saturated.
Okay. Okay, so here's my theory, basically. Obviously, Tony Khan is the owner of AEW, but also he's got an analysis gig at the Jaguars. And I think during the season, between September and maybe February, these complaints towards AEW has come across because, like, even though he's not like the main don at creative, he's like too busy trying to make the worst team in the NFL slightly better, which he fails every year. And then post as well as work, like, I just think maybe he's stretching himself thin. Therefore, he was like replacing with him being a stretch, like stretch thing. He's like, I've got Fulham to do. I've got Jacksonville to do. I've got AEW to do. Why don't I just get loads of wrestlers, way too much wrestlers that I need, and they can just sort it out themselves. So we can technically do the same storylines again and again, but with different wrestlers. That's what I think his thing is. So he needs to quit one of them jobs.
He needs to choose. It's actually true. Like, or he just needs to get someone else on board. He needs to get like a Paul Heyman on board. Like,
let's be completely real. If you were like on a date and you were like, yeah, I'm executive Fulham of Fulham. I'm executive Fulham of Fulham. I'm an executive at Fulham. I run AEW and I help my dad run an NFL team. You'd be like, where's the time for me, babes? Like, you ain't got no time for me. So, yeah, that's my theory. You ain't got time for it. That's why it's like sloppy.
Ain't got time. In terms of AEW currently, just a couple of things I just want to pick up. And then I've got some gossip about AEW. Number one, it's lovely to see the House of Black back. House of Black are one of my favorite staples, fractions within wrestling at this moment in time. I don't think they're being elevated to the point they could be, but it's just great to see them back.
Great song.
If we don't know, we've got a new ROH champion, which happened yesterday. Chris Jericho is now our new ROH champion, which is not necessary.
Right. Well, hold on.
Very
simple.
Hold on.
Yes, it is unnecessary. But doesn't it mean he's like the first person to win it all belts in all places?
I have a feeling it might be. I think I have a feeling he might be.
Apart from NWA, I don't think he's
NWA. But I think he definitely is.
But I think he's the closest to win a gold at all places.
Yeah.
Yeah, he must be the closest.
Yeah, I think he is the closest.
He must be the closest.
The learning tree at the moment in time, isn't it?
Look. I think both runs coincided to each other are interesting runs. Maybe because I'm like sitting out, because it feels like Mark, we all know why Mark maybe was pushed to win the title. Let's be completely honest.
Sadly,
we all know why Mark was pushed towards the belt. RFU to his brother. But then, like, Jericho also leading the last run. He wants to collect the last few titles if it is the last run. I don't know. It's one of those matches where it would have been a dream match 5 years ago, but now it's happened. Like, but now it's like a bit like, guys, I think one of you should take a break or one of you should just go home. Like, yeah, it just seems. That. Yeah. But yeah, good luck to him, innit? Wish him the best.
The other thing I want to say is about Shelton Benjamin. Obviously, he's doing some teams with MVP at the moment in time. I can't see what happens with Swerve. I'm looking forward to that. And then obviously, we're probably going to get Bobby Lashley in about a couple months' time, which would be nice.
Are you sure Bobby's coming?
It must be.
Are you sure for Bobby?
It must be. We love Shelton, but Shelton cannot be...
Nah, I want it to be Keith.
Well, I would love Keith. I would love Keith. Keith needs to be doing Keith. Keith needs to be doing bits, and he's not doing bits. It's really disappointing.
And Tony, with all that money, needs to buy the Bask in the Glory theme song. He needs to do whatever is in his power to be like, yo, we need Bask in His Glory. Because as soon as he lost that song, Keith Lee was never the same. But I digress.
But last but not least, let me give you the gossip before we go into our Black History roundtable.
Okay.
A certain AEW couple are no longer together.
Ooh.
I'm referring to...
Wait. Is it Orange Cassidy and Orange Juice?
is it Orange Cassidy and Orange Juice? No, it is not... It is Britt Baker and Adam Bebe Cole. It has been confirmed they no longer are together, which I'm just saying, fine.
Yeah, fine.
Fine.
But, you're like, but just a little bit gossip. Sorry that your love didn't bang, but listen, like at the end of the day, yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like I was going to do some wordplay that was problematic, so I'm going to stop myself.
Yeah, you stop yourself.
But listen, I think Mrs. DND, DND, DMD, I think, yeah, no, listen, like, relationships happen. Hopefully they can still work together and it's, like, not awkward. And hopefully, like,
yeah,
it was an amicable thing.
Yeah,
hopefully it's an amicable thing where we don't find out any, like, crazy beef thing 3 years from now, when we really let the rest of them, we're like, oh, for God's sake, let's hope so. Let's just hope that's like,
let's hope.
Like they broke up because they're both sad, but sad in a way that they can make themselves happier away from each other. That's the most diplomatic way I've ever said that.
Well, on that note, we are now going to go into our roundtable discussion. Let's hit it now. Let's get into it. Black History Month!
Yeah.
This week, I have been joined by one half of the Fluffy Boys, Ibs.
Come on.
Yeah, and we are going to be obviously just doing a rundown of Black History within professional wrestling.
For those you don't really understand, Black history in professional wrestling reflects a journey of perseverance, resistance against systematic racism, and a rise of cultural icons. While the sport was slow to offer equal opportunities, Black wrestlers have shattered barriers, challenged stereotypes, and built lasting legacies. So we're going to be discussing some of those legacies today in this episode. And I think basically, for me, I didn't really obviously know much about pre-1980s wrestlers in the situation. When I was doing my research, we have to apparently give a shout out to Bubba Brazil.
Yeah. First guy to win Intercontinental title.
I believe he was the first Black wrestler to compete regularly against white wrestlers in major promotions, debuting in 1950s. Mm-hmm. In the 1950s, oh my God. And especially in that time where it was the racial divide.
Yeah, mad.
He even won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship.
That's a world title, yeah.
In 1962, even though the victory was disputed due to his race. And he's basically the pioneer of Black wrestlers. And then if you move into the 1970s and 80s, we have the rise of Black superstars. Ernie Ladd, a.k.a. known as the Black Cat, was a former professional wrestler, professional football player. He became a wrestling star. 6'9", he often played the villain because of the height, and was one of the first Black wrestlers to embrace such a role. He was a trailblazer behind the scenes, advocating for more opportunities for Black wrestlers, standing up against racism. We also have Junkyard Dog, one of the most beloved figures in the 1980s, again, breaking racial boundaries, especially in Southern territories.
Because I think they must have had it a lot, like 10 times harder, because obviously doing a lot of wrestling as heartlands are in the southern states of America. So imagine dealing with that, walking into the ring, trying to be a heel when you're getting hurled like racist abuse and all of that. So like, shout out to those pioneers who did it. You've got to Ron the Truth, Ron
well,
Simmons
this is
yet?
Coming up next. So the 1990s, which is obviously the era that I really embraced wrestling, one of the first matches I saw was the Acolytes.
Ah, yes.
Which features Ron Simmons and obviously Bradshaw. At the time, he was just called Bradshaw. He wasn't doing the damn
much.
It wasn't until like later on. What obviously Ron Simmons, pioneer. I feel like in the '90s, Black wrestlers were breaking through even bigger boundaries and bigger walls, becoming world champions. Ron Simmons made history as he was first officially recognized as the first Black world champion in a major promotion when he won the WCW World Heavyweight Championship.
Have you seen the moment when he wins it?
I have. Oh,
it's really good. Like, you get like goosebumps. And now when you look back at it, like looking at it from the archive, you're like, no, like everyone was actually happy for him. And I think, as well as him being a Black wrestler who deserved it, I feel like overall he was a very good guy who helps loads of people. And you can see that more in moments like pre maybe 2010, where if someone that everyone really liked would let people come in the ring and they'd lift the title as well.
Yeah.
And that, like, having that as his first moment is like really big.
Well, also like in the 1990s, especially towards the end, obviously in towards the Attitude Era, we did have like the whole train.
Yeah. The whole
which
train.
I feel, when I watched it, I enjoyed the whole train.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to be a member of the whole train. I didn't even realize what it was really about, to be honest with you.
See, you know what, WWE, the Attitude Era, made us have so many random awkward conversations with our parents that we're not ready to have with us. Yeah. Therefore, that's why I know a lot of people who stopped watching wrestling like in during those times, because like, imagine, Mom, I want to be on the whole train. What?
Well, The Godfather was, if you look back at The Godfather now in this day and age, obviously he was portrayed as a pimp.
Yeah.
Which is not a great stereotype for a Black person.
Okay. Yeah, okay. On. Right. So, yes, you are correct. And it would never make TV now. However, like in a time where it was very hard to get over, everyone had to get over by themselves. You're dealing with all the other things with WCW as well. the fact that Papa Shango, who was a second thought, became one of the most top mid-carders through doing that. You've got to shout that out. So you've got to shout out, I forget the wrestler's real name for the life of me, but you've got to shout out the Godfather's like work ethic to get to where he got to.
Yeah,
and it works because it's very easy for him to be like he could have said it in a different way and it wouldn't have worked. That gimmick could have been like one of those ones where it could have been dead on arrival.
Yeah.
Because it worked at the time, and in that time, in that period of time during the Attitude Era, was sex sells and so on and so forth.
Because as soon as that music came on, everyone was like,
yeah, do you know what I mean? To this day, you'd hear that.
I think also we have to, if you're talking about the 90s, it was like the rise of D'Lo Brown, The Rock, D-Lo. Obviously, Mark Henry, obviously we did mention about Farouk, aka Ron Simmons, and they all came together to create the Nation of Domination, which was a WWE faction which ran for 2 years, which actually is a long time.
Which in like 90, like especially with the tensions in the 90s with like your Rodney Kings, your OJs, and all these different, like the hate on gangster rap, like, and like the films like the Malcolm X movie came in. There was a lot of like tension, but a lot of learning from like American culture, learning about what Black people struggle with. I think what America have got down is like everyone knows the struggle.
Yeah.
As i.e. like not necessarily like here in the UK we don't know the struggle, but in America the stories have been told throughout history, and like so it's easier and it's less, you can have those conversations about why this is not happening. They're still going to be as hard, but they're easier to set, unlike here. So that's why the Nation was a perfect way to get that in. And even though they were considered heels, I think a lot of people were like, this is cool.
Yeah, because obviously it was based off the Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
And obviously Black Power movements. If you talk like, we're talking about like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, that kind of vibe. It was based off those. And to have like such prominent people within WWE talk about certain things, to have dashikis on.
Yeah.
In a day where it wasn't really known in America was powerful to see. And also it kind of gave them the voice. They were able to talk. They were able to have a mic. And obviously The Rock.
The famous Rock.
Yeah.
Die, Rocky, die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It classes, The Rock kind of classes that movement or that section of his like career as his starting point of the rise of The Rock, because he was able to like be on a mic, show his talents, to show everyone that he can actually talk as well as just wrestle.
But also we need to give a special shout out to D'Lo Brown. D'Lo Brown's the man.
The head.
D'Lo Brown, like
the head movement.
One of my first enters into WWE was watching a D'Lo Brown match. So I like, yeah. Mark Henry, even though like Mark Henry at the start, we didn't get it.
Sexual chocolate.
Like the way that sexual, like, because the Godfather thing could have become Sexual Chocolate like that, but the whole train worked. Sexual Chocolate works less. Yeah. But from Salmon Suit onwards, Mark Henry was a man.
Yeah. I think also at that time, Viscera.
Yeah.
Being such a big man as well. Like he was bigger than Mark Henry. Being such a big man, but obviously joining one of my favorite factions,
the Demonic Dons.
Yeah.
Ministry of Darkness.
Yeah.
Trying to think, is there any more like Attitude Era black wrestlers that we've missed?
Well, the one I want to give a shout out to is a woman.
Yes. Are you going to say Jacqueline?
Jacqueline.
Yeah.
You have to give a shout out to Jacqueline.
We saw her recently at Bad Blood. Yeah, still looks good. Black don't crack. Yeah, come on.
Jacqueline was, for me, one of the first women I saw who was a wrestler.
Yeah.
Who, even though she was hot.
Yeah.
And like, obviously, in that, especially in that era, was everyone was at the fake boobs.
Yeah.
And like the body and whatever. She was still a wrestler. Her, Ivy, like that kind of.
Also, Jazz, who was towards the end of the Attitude Era, moving Ruthless Aggression. She was another one who could wrestle. Like. And it was very rare to see actual females who wrestled in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, they would always end up descending into bra and panty matches, sadly.
I know.
But yeah, Jacqueline is someone that should be shouted at. And thank God she's got her. Is she a Hall of Famer? Yeah, she's a Hall of Famer now. But like, yeah, she seemed like someone who didn't get their flowers, who should have got their flowers immediately. And now they've got them, thank goodness. But yeah. But then we've got to look at also, we've talked about WWE. Let's go over to WCW.
Go on. So now you want to give a shout.
I want to talk about my man, Mr. Wiggle, Norman Smiley.
I know.
Oh, listen, because I started off watching wrestling like via WCW, and like I think Norman Smiley was the first black man I saw wrestle, and I was just like, I remember what blew my mind because I saw him do a promo. He was walking into the ring, and I think they dubbed him from Liverpool, England. I was like, what? Like, and I thought for a while that Scousers sounded American because of Norman Smiley. Like, so yeah, love Norman Smiley. Got to talk about Harlem Heat.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the greatest promo ever. And Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to say. Hey, listen, it's Black History Month. I'm kind of allowed.
Yeah.
You can bleep that. No, don't bleep it. It's our month, but yeah, no, that's still one of my favorite promos. I heard it in a rap song the other day.
Really?
Someone put it in a rap song.
Well, talking about obviously Harlem Heat,
yeah.
Even into the 2000s was obviously the continuation of black wrestlers gaining prominence within WWE and other major promotions. We did have racial ties appear within storylines.
Yeah.
And notably, this one does involve Booker T, because obviously the 2000s, WWE had bought WCW and some of their wrestlers had moved over into WWE in terms of the invasion storyline. And obviously WWE had its main card roster. Booker T was main card roster on WCW. You move into a company that was kind of like your rival. Yeah.
The Ops.
The Ops. Yeah. You're now the Ops.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we all notably know about.
Is it 23 seconds or however it took for him to do that pin at WrestleMania 19? The biggest bullshits of bullshits ever.
Against Triple
like,
H.
To this day, like, until Triple H cut his hair, I was like, nah, you're low-key a bit racist. like I did, like, every time I see him in a suit, I'm like, you're the same guy. You're Macbeth. I hate you.
Macbeth.
He is Macbeth. And I'll keep pushing this issue. Triple H is Macbeth. But since he cut his hair, I've been less angry about it.
Yeah.
But still, to this day, man, and the fact that we didn't get a big Booker T WWE title run.
Well, we had him.
He King won Booker. The world title. He won the world heavyweight.
Well, he's a five-time.
I think
five
six
time,
or seven.
Five-time.
Yeah,
five-time WCW world heavyweight champion. Yes.
Last WCW champion as well.
Yeah. After the demise, he transitioned into WWE, where he won multiple championships and eventually became King Booker.
King Booker. And also, we need to never forget his work.
Wife.
Yeah, his wife Charmel, and also his work in TNA, where he had one of the most questionable African accents I've ever heard. Yeah, but I felt attacked, but also I couldn't be mad as Booker T. And never forget where he commentated him beating someone down in TNA.
Yeah,
Booker T's TNA work. He caught me a good time where Mum wouldn't pay for Sky because she caught me watching a live sex show. Shout out Edge and Lita. And so Booker T came into my life in NXT. Not NXT. I keep saying NXT because he's on NXT. But yeah, I've got so much time for Booker T.
Well, even we're talking about NXT, he obviously is one of the commentators on NXT. And I feel like he's also like one of the big leaders backstage. Mm. And I think his charisma, his style.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Spinner Rooney.
Yeah. Oh.
Him trying to get the Undertaker to do Spinner Rooney is probably one of my favorite moments in the world.
Yeah,
no. And then also like him stone cold in the supermarket.
Yeah, probably the greatest non in rings like
segment
ever. Him on the like the aisle, and he folds himself into the listen. Yeah, shout out Booker T, man.
Booker T,
and he's still doing it, still bringing wrestlers up to this day, like. It's like I said, it was a while. I felt personally a lot of black wrestlers didn't get the flowers that they deserved. And thank goodness for like society and the ways things are changing slowly but surely that they're getting the love they deserve. We also need to remember, if we're talking like mid-2000s or pushing towards 2000 wrestlers, we need to talk about the man who was in the world's greatest tag team. We need to talk about Shelton Benjamin, the gold standard.
We need to talk about the gold standard. Shelton Benjamin was someone who, for me, was pure wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pure wrestling. For me, first black person to be like pure wrestling.
Yeah.
May not be good on the mic, but in the ring.
As we've seen recently on AEW, but yeah.
Hey.
Thank God for his mouthpiece.
Well,
he was another brother we need to talk about. MVP. But let's finish off Shelton. Obviously, the super kick that he got from Shawn Michaels is probably one of the best moments during that era.
Yeah.
Just so athletic. So helped out Brock Lesnar. Still in the game to this day. Shame he didn't get a world title run.
Yeah.
But you kind of understand the talent that he was rocking with during that time where they were absolute killers throughout the whole roster.
I think, I'm intrigued to see what he's going to do in AEW, but I think obviously like titles career-wise, I think like
you can see him getting an ROH world title.
Yeah, if anything. But I do feel Shelton was a pioneer of like pure wrestling,
yeah.
Especially with him teaming up with Kurt Angle, Chad Gable.
Charlie Haas.
Thank you so much.
He is Chad Gable now.
that's what I was like. Chad Gable. But also, I think at this time in the 2000s, Mark Henry became his own, became the world's strongest man.
Salmon suit Mark.
Yeah, came out, became world heavyweight champion in 2011.
Yeah.
His Hall of Pain persona, which I completely forgot until I was doing my research about this, dominated opponents with brutal force, gave him one of the most memorable runs of his career. And then he was inducted in Hall of Fame in 2018.
As he should be.
I think also like his work outside of WWE, becoming the world's strongest man, was like helpful towards him as well. Yeah. I think it made him feel more legitimate rather than just being a big man. Because like there's quite a few big men who like you can throw around, but like him being
he was a strong man. You wasn't going to see him on top of the rope, but you knew when Mark Henry was in the ring, you knew it was going to be a brutal big men slapping meat sort of exchange. And also, if it wasn't for Mark, we wouldn't have Jade Cargill on TV because Mark discovered her. Also, is it the story of, I think it's Samantha Irvin as well, had to interaction with Mark Henry in order for that to happen. And those guys are big people on TV now, big black leaders who we love and we cherish. Let's not talk about my love for Samantha Irvin. He was a fantastic black pioneer. God bless you and your beautiful voice. And the other lady on SmackDown as well. There's two black announcers on SmackDown. On WWE. One's on Raw, one's on SmackDown.
Yeah.
All right. I was like, what happened to the other white dude? But listen, in our month, let that happen, you know.
Well, moving into the 2010s, it is obviously the modern era.
No, we haven't mentioned him. Yes, we could talk about him through these decades, but I think we need to start now that during the early 2000s was the start of one Ron the Truth Killings. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
First NWA world champion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And TNA. Changed his life around from being a backup dancer and considering getting a rapper and being Tupac's mate to becoming like one of the most entertaining wrestlers. And the thing is, Truth has always been entertaining, like always, even when he was like the crazy deranged person, less so Little Jimmy, more TNA, with when he was like feuding with Jeff Jarrett and so on and so forth. Yeah, but Truth, it's good that now he's seen his flowers while he's still a competitor in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Because it would have been a damn shame if he retired and then 10 years later, we'd have been like, oh yeah, the streets would never forget our Truth.
I also am going to give a shout out because I completely forgot about New Jack.
Yeah. Oh, mate.
You can't talk about, especially extreme wrestling, if we're not talking about New Jack, RIP New Jack, who passed away in 2021. But the things he would do in the ring, outside the ring, with his body, crazy. Oh, no, there was some controversy around some of the things that he did outside of the ring included. But my God, did he.
And also his heel work in Smoky Mountain, where they are actively like racist. They were actively being racist to him. And he decided, you know what? I'm going to be a heel. But like, what's really funny is in any other circumstances, he wouldn't have been a heel, because he was like fighting at racist Smoky Mountain Wrestling. He's like, you know what? Let's lean into this.
Yeah.
We need to make money. And the promo where he shouts out OJ Simpson, wild.
Wow, crazy.
Like, he shouts out OJ. He's like, keep on doing the good work, OJ. Like, what?
Crazy.
And like, In a conservative, racist room. What? like that's brave.
That
took a lot of cocaine. Yeah. That took a lot of cocaine for you to be like, yeah, I'm going to do that shit.
So, moving into the 20 modern era, if you want to put it that, the 2010s, it became an era, if you want to call it, for equality, diversity, and representation. I think we can't talk about 2010 without...
Orlando Jordan?
Yeah.
No, please, let's not. Orlando Jordan is the low light. I'm sorry. We are talking about black history. We've got to talk about the bad stuff sometimes. And Orlando Jordan in the cabinet wasn't a fan. Wasn't a fan. I didn't like your hair. I didn't like your trunks. I didn't even like your music. Like, you always lost to Chris Benoit. And then, man, like, listen, Orlando Jordan, rubbish. Please continue.
Well, I was going to go with a highlight. And that highlight was going to be Kofi Kingston.
Yeah. Oh.
I think Kofi Kingston's journey in, obviously, he started off with his fake Jamaican accent.
Yeah.
But to the top of the WWE represents one of the most significant moments in black history, wrestling. In 2019, after years of being mid-card, we had Kofi Mania winning his WWE championship.
Before we get to Kofi Mania, I give you another reason why I thought Triple H was racist. Why did Triple H have to put him out in the street like he was Jamaican?
I know.
We didn't have to do that, Triple H.
We didn't have to do it. It wasn't even bold.
Hold on, listen. You are on, listen, mid-2000s to you cutting your hair. I don't know about you, bro. I'm not going to lie. You were enemy of progress. You were a low light for black people. Like, watching wrestling during your reign of terror. Triple H, eyes. Yeah, I like how you're promoting black people now, because you know what you did was exactly dirty.
Because he wasn't even born in Jamaica, he was born in Ghana.
Yeah.
You gave him a fake accent. Nah, but Kofi Mania was amazing. Winning his WWE championship at WrestleMania 35, becoming the first African-born WWE champion. Let's not talk about how he lost it.
Yeah.
But... but even the things that he did within, like, Royal Rumble, pioneering certain moves, spots, becoming a fixture and moving from mid-card into that WWE and having the fans behind him.
I feel like Kofi was one of the first cruiserweights that wasn't Rey Mysterio that like people actually cared about.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, with the New Day,
we'll get
to them in a minute, but I remember I cried watching Kofi win the title.
Oh.
But I, like, yeah, maybe I was a bit stoned. But listen, yeah, like, I did cry when he watched it. I thought that was one of those moments where, like, if I was like 15 years younger and I saw that, I'd be like, yo, I'm a pro wrestler now. Like, real talk. Like, I think that's one of the, to this day, I think that's my favorite WrestleMania moment.
Oh.
That, and then maybe The Rock and Hogan doing the little But yeah, Kofi winning it, grabbing his kids, Xavier and Big E giving him the hug.
Yeah, we can't talk about Kofi Kingston without talking about the New Day.
Yeah,
they're coming up to 10 years now. I'm really sad they're going to split up. It looks like they're splitting up, but like the New Day, Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, Big E.
Yeah.
Started off Preachers and then turning into this, the life of the show.
Yeah.
Booty-os, merch, hosting WrestleMania. Do you remember that WrestleMania moment where they were like, oh, are we gonna be in the tag team ladder match? No, it's
the Hardys. Yeah.
Probably one of the greatest tag teams ever within WWE, or just in history, I would say.
And do you know what I think the great thing about the New Day? It was the first time, yeah, where like I do consider myself a goofy black dude, yeah. And you never really saw goofy black dudes on TV,
no,
because it was seen as like on one hand, I do get it. You didn't want to be seen as a character tour or like see someone who was a character tour on TV because that would make you feel some type of way. But it was the first time where you knew it was like they were unashamedly themselves.
Yeah.
And we never had characters like that until the New Day pulled up.
They did a promo. They were doing a promo against Kevin Owens whilst they were in the ring, and like Sami Zayn had come out and joined Kevin Owens. And this was probably like, what, 4 years ago? But it was probably my favorite promo ever. Mm. They were so funny. They're funny, they're hilarious, they're also athletic. We also can't talk about, if we're talking about 2010s, Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, Bobby Lashley.
Amazing.
With MVP and the Hurt Business.
Oh, the Hurt Business. We're moving into 2020s now.
I know. Let's stay in 2010.
Cool.
Okay.
We move into 2020s because we have got Bobby Lashley talking about becoming a dominant champion within 2021
and
representing a big push for black athletes in his role.
But also we've got to have a quick shout out to when Bobby Lashley was doing his thing in WWE, we had Monty the Pounce Brown in TNA. He was just electric. He just covered pounds. There's like, yeah. And it, obviously there's going to be loads of people we've missed out, which we are eternally sorry for.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, if we're going back to the 2020s, sorry.
I was going to say, we have to talk about Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks at WrestleMania 37 in 2021, where they became the first two black women to main event a WrestleMania.
And like,
I think in terms of like the match itself, I think you could see how far it's a testament how far wrestling has come in terms of black representation, especially for black women, and especially Bianca's rise from winning Royal Rumble into headlining WrestleMania.
And then also you've got to think about your Sasha Banks, her pioneered into women's wrestling. Monet. And then you've got Naomi. You've got Bianca now, you've got Jade, you've got Nia Jax.
We have to give a shout out to Alicia Fox.
Alicia Fox, shout out.
Even though the hair was not doing things.
Oh, listen.
The hair things were not doing things, but you know what, pioneer.
You just
pioneer
know that there was
women.
No one who looked like Alicia who was doing her hair during them times.
Yeah.
Very clear.
I think these people that we're talking about have been staple, and the spirit and efforts of putting black people, black talent into the spotlight has given people opportunities such as Jade Cargill. So we talk about Swerve Strickland a lot, having the best year of his life. Even Powerhouse Hobbs.
Yeah.
We've got up and coming stars now coming up in wrestling, even that we see in the UK, like Dereese.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Dereese.
Michael as well.
Michael Oku. Oh, it's amazing to see these people having the opportunities that they have now. And it wouldn't be if it wasn't for the people that have pioneered them.
And also we can't forget the non-wrestlers who we saw in Canon, like Teddy Long.
Oh, Teddy Long!
Oh,
making everything attacking.
With the Undertaker, with the worst dance ever. Like, no, I'm not gonna lie. You took us a few steps back with that dance. I'm not gonna lie, Teddy. Teddy, we know black people can dance better than that, and the way you were dancing was not great. I'm not gonna lie. But apart from that, my first GM I actually cared about. All the other GMs, I was like, you're just making noise. We knew when you came, the energy shit was about to pop off.
Yeah.
Also, like Jonathan Coachman. Coachman and The Rock segments were always entertainment. I like Byron Saxon. Byron Saxon gets a bad rap, but it's good to see like people like us on TV. And long may it continue, man.
And obviously, we talked about your girl.
My girl.
On her ring announcing skills.
Oh, listen, Samantha Irvin. Hey. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's so refreshing to see now more than ever, like before where it was very rare to see a black person of prominence on WWE canon or in any wrestling canon. And it was like that one person we had to cling on, so it didn't matter if we thought they were good or not. You were like, nah, that's our guy. But now we can actually critique. Say we prefer this person, we prefer that person. At the end of the day, we do want them to win and like progress and be successful in their lives, just like we want every black person in the world to be, but apart from Diddy, but like...
apart from Diddy.
Also, we need to shout out our favourite part-time black wrestler, Snoop Dogg.
Who is in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Yeah, hey, Snoop. Snoop done a lot, like... But no, it's so nice to see that, like, now more than ever, that, like, there are black people, like, all over wrestling, all in all these different places, where before it was a novelty. Like, now it's not, it's fairly novel to see black wrestlers in New Japan. Before it was like Bob Sapp, who was not a wrestler.
Yeah.
Who was a man looking for, a big man who was looking for money. Whereas, like, now it's the world. If you're a wrestler, I think now more than ever, you, like, it doesn't matter what you look like, you can be a wrestler.
Yeah.
And if you've got the talent, it can.
Yeah, if we were talking about Willow earlier.
Yeah. Willow Nightingale as well. Athena.
Oh, Athena,
phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like,
because I think even after, I don't know if you saw the conference after Bad Blood, someone asked Triple H about diversity representation within WWE, and he kind of was like, I don't see race. And I was like, oh, Triple H.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, Triple
Man
H
is still playing the game.
And I was like, Triple H. Oh, he's like, he was just like, they work hard. If they've got the talent, I don't see reason. I was just like, Triple H.
Okay, cool, Triple H, don't do that.
Let's not do that. Because Black history in wrestling is a story of breaking boundaries, challenging racism, and achieving greatness in an industry that has not always been welcoming. Today, wrestlers are celebrated not just for their race, but for their excellence, creativity, and contributions to wrestling's ongoing evolution. And shall it continue?
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed our little black history section. If you have any thoughts, or if you disagree with some of the things that we said in terms of, like, people that we've not mentioned potentially, please do let us know. We want to hear your thoughts. What are your favorite moments within black history, within wrestling? We want to hear them.
Is the boogeyman black?
Oh my god,
yeah, it's the boogeyman black.
How can we forget the boogeyman?
I'm the boogeyman, and I'm coming to get you. Which was horrifying as a child, but also you get it now.
Yeah.
You get it. Shout out the boogeyman.
Shout out the boogeyman.
All right, he's coming to get you. Sorry, that was...
I hope you found that very interesting, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone in between, in terms of our Black History Wrestlers discussion. It was very great for us to be able to do that, because we didn't get to do it last year, for me and Ibs to have our little Wakanda Forever moment, especially because it's Black History Month in the UK.
Yeah, and we didn't mention Virgil. I don't know why we didn't mention Virgil.
Oh, we didn't mention Virgil. We'll mention it now.
Yeah, shout out Virgil, RIP. You were a very silly man, but in the most respectful way.
Like we said, there's probably some others that we didn't mention. We did mention, for example, because obviously it's Halloween as well, the boogeyman at the end. So if there is any others that we didn't mention that you feel like needs recognition, please do let us know so we can talk about it next week on the podcast. Apart from that, I'm going to go and have a...
But if you want to tell us all the black wrestlers you didn't think were good, like, as wrestlers, that's one, that's more engagement for us. Two, that's like debates as well. We'll talk about them being bad wrestlers, just being bad wrestlers, not because they were bad wrestlers because they were black. Let's just make that very clear.
Well, apart from that, I'm going to go and have a coffee now. My name is Sakita, as always, the head of the table at the Wrestle Club UK podcast. Please do like and subscribe. Please do tell your friends. And I will probably see you this weekend at Progress. I have been joined this week by my fellow black wrestling fan, Wakanda Forever, Black History Month special brother, Ibs.
Please fund us to go WrestleMania.
Please fund us. Okay. Bye, producer Tim.
I'm not part of the Wakanda Forever, but I would also like to go to Vegas, please. Bye.
Yeah, that's how we ended the pod. Yeah, that's how we ended the pod.
Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you, everyone.
A flying clothesline, a 2x4 to the face. Then she hits you with a turnbuckle splash. Wrestle Club Podcast with Sakisa. It's her and her friends, and they talk about wrestling, every kind of wrestling. Woo!